doesn't have to be a fancy art book. It can be a zine too. It could be a small book. It could be something through one of these on-demand services. I think it's super valuable to do, and also just fun. You know, that's important too. Like that, we remember we started doing this stuff because it was fun for us. It was fulfilling on a creative level. It was something that was inspiring, and it gave us that little kick of like, "Ooh, I look at this picture I took. This is awesome." And then a year later, take another picture, and then you look at the old picture and you'll be like, wow, that wasn't that great, but I thought it was pretty great then. And look at this picture now that I took, it's way better. You know, that's a really great feeling to grow and learn things.
This week on the show, I am speaking with Wesley Verhoeve. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Contact Sheet. We are back in action, finally. If you missed last week's episode, I did a little bit of like an in-depth catch-up, just talking about kind of where I was, plans for the show moving forward, why I went on a bit of a hiatus, and just some of the changes I'm making and things like that. But I am really excited for today's show and for this interview. It's the first one I wanted to launch coming back, just because me and Wesley, we actually recorded this interview last, I think, September, so quite a while ago. I feel really bad that the interview has sat for this long, but it kind of came right at the point when I was going on or made the decision to go on break with this show, unfortunately, and I really didn't want to kind of put it out there in the middle of that. I wanted to wait until things were rolling again. So this is the first one that I'm kicking it off with, and then seeing where things go from here, like I said, the episode I just released will kind of lay everything out. But if you aren't familiar with Wesley, he is a photographer and a curator based in Amsterdam and New York City, at least when we spoke last. That may have changed now. When we were speaking, he was actually in Amsterdam. And in this interview, we talk about Wesley's early career when he was in the music business, how he transitioned into the world of photography. And then we kind of spend the bulk of it talking about his latest project, this book titled Notice that he's made, which is his first monograph, and just how this came to be. It's a really fascinating story. Wesley started this project while he was kind of locked down just on the outskirts of Vancouver City at the start of the pandemic. A lot of great lessons to take away from this episode, just about like taking action, staying curious, and then just like this journey of a project from conception to production. So I know I personally was reminded of a lot and also learned a lot from this one. So especially if you're interested in projects and in the world of print, I think you'll enjoy this one. Definitely check out Wesley's work. You can find him on Instagram, his website as well. He has a great weekly newsletter titled Process that I highly recommend. And then his book, Notice, I just checked today, still available for pre-order. He's hit all his kind of targets, but there were some copies left. It's done really well so far. So highly recommend checking that out as well and grabbing a copy if you're interested in it. Other than that, though, gonna stop talking. We'll get into the interview and then I'll talk to you at the end. You're in Amsterdam right now.
Yeah, and before this, I lived in New York City for almost 20 years. So
that's right.
It's all a little bit like, it wasn't by choice that I was in Vancouver for the first 5 months of the pandemic, but it was a wonderful place to be.
Yeah. Well, okay, so before we jump into that, then let's get started with, I would love to just like briefly learn just a little bit about your background, because I know that you've obviously been doing photography for a long time, but you also did a number of things before photography as well. So we don't have to obviously get into too many details, but I just think for maybe anyone who's listening to this who isn't super familiar with your work, just to like paint a little bit of a picture of like what your creative journey has been over, say, like the past 20 years.
My creative journey. Wow. If we're limiting it to the past 20 years, then 20 years ago or so, I moved to New York City to go work in, or I wanted to work in the music business, which I ended up doing as a young little intern at a record label. And so the first, let's say, 8 to 10 years of New York City were music filled and music obsessed. And it's a long period. So I did a lot of different things in that period, from working at major record labels to starting an indie record label to producing over 80 records for other people, to writing songs for TV shows, to managing artists, like you name it, performing. that was like my whole life. It was full, you know, when you live in New York and you're you have a creative passion and you want to pursue that for as your craft, as your job, then it's very possible to only do that constantly and forever.
For sure.
So for that, yeah, that's my entire 10-year block, music things, you know, not much else, which was fine because I loved it. And so after about 10 years or so, I kind of started getting burned out a little bit. That coincided with the industry changing when streaming started becoming a popular thing and the economics of the music business started changing as well. So because, like I said, my whole life was music, my identity was like Wesley, the music guy, right? So that was my self-identity. Like, I wasn't really sure what I was outside of that. And so to kind of process that, like that desire to change away from the music business, I started traveling around the United States a bit and brought along a camera. My father's a photographer, so that was always like a thing that was present in my life. And in that period that I traveled around the U.S., that was around the same time that there was I call it the second wave of my friends moving out of New York City, because it happens in waves. You know, at some point, like, the creative people hit a certain age, things get too expensive, and they end up moving to Nashville or Detroit or Seattle, whatever. And so I was very curious about that, about the why, and like, well, what happens in Nashville then? What happens in New Orleans? All that kind of stuff. And all cities that I hadn't really been to yet. Well, actually, New Orleans I had been to, but I picked 12 cities, basically, that I hadn't really been to, where all these people from the creative world of Brooklyn were moving to. And I decided, well, I can work from a coffee shop in Brooklyn on my laptop, on my music stuff, or I can go to these cities, right? I can sit in a Detroit coffee shop too and kind of get a taste for what the creative community is like there. And the camera was just along because, you know, why not? And I decided, as I met some people, oh, I'll take their portrait. I'll talk to them. I'll do a little interview. Like, why do you live in Detroit? Like, what's it like to be in the creative community here? And I think the first two cities I went to were Seattle and Portland, Oregon. And I took pictures of about four, five, six interesting people that I met at the coffee shop that were creatives of sorts. And then I went to Charleston, South Carolina for my third city. And it kind of went way off the rails there. I met, like, on the first day, I met this bartender, well, like, barista, really. And he was like, hey, you're not from here. I was definitely sticking out like a sore thumb in Charleston, South Carolina. And what are you doing here? So I told him, well, you know, this journey, and I'm, like, looking to meet some people from the creative community. He's like, say no more. I've got you. And in that week that I was there, through him, really, I ended up taking portraits and interviewing about 50 creative people of, like, all different kinds, like old, young, black, white, musicians, poets, designers, etc. And I felt really alive. Like, that was like an amazing time for me. And then I was like, well, this is really making me feel creative and pumped up, and like I'm very curious about all these people. And now I kind of have to go back to Seattle and Portland, because I can't have like five people in Portland and 50 in South Carolina. That doesn't make any sense. And so I ended up building it into a project where I did roughly 50 people per city in those 12 cities. That project is called One of Many, has a website, oneofmany.co, and it's over 600 people. And that took about a year to do. And as I was doing it, it just kind of started getting traction. This is 2013, 14, I think. Started getting traction. I got some sponsors for it, like, just like, you know, YouTube channels these days have sponsors, and actually pretty much the same sponsors, like Squarespace and MailChimp and all them. And that allowed me to do it. That made it more possible for me to do it. And press started picking up on it. It became kind of a thing. And then I was really lucky because it was timed perfectly with advertising agencies veering away from, like, just generic models and ads. And they wanted to have real people doing cool things. And those were exactly the kind of photos that I was taking. So I started getting calls from companies and agencies to take similar photos for campaigns. And that's about a year after I started that doing that project. And then another year or so passes, maybe 2 years pass. And then I realized I was making more money from my photo gigs and for my music income. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm a professional photographer now. So that's kind of like how that happened.
What's amazing about that, couple things. One, I love that it's like such a great example of like taking action, right? Which is hard to do it sometimes, especially when you're facing like an identity crisis, yes. Which is the worst kind, yes. As a creative. I've never had to like make a shift, but there's certainly been points in my career where like I've been super burnt out, thought about quitting, and then those thoughts come into my head, right? Where I'm like, what else would I do? Like, this is right. Who I am, like a photographer. So like hearing your story about, you know, being someone in the music industry, thinking about doing anything else just would seem crazy. And then you kind of go and you dabble a little bit with photography, and it's kind of spirals into this thing where you discover this, essentially this new direction.
Yeah, totally. Like. Yeah, and it wasn't planned at all. Even as I started getting calls just for little gigs like that, I wasn't thinking like, oh, this is going to be my job. But I was thinking, ooh, I want to do more of this because it's really making me feel really happy and it's mm-hmm. really interesting. And so I was fortunate that I had that time, that I was granted that time to explore that, because I worked my ass off with the music company, so that mm-hmm. was still generating some income. And I was what we call ramen profitable at the time, meaning I could pay rent and eat ramen, and that was it. And I was, you know, I was young enough where that was good enough.
Yeah.
And that allowed me the opportunity to do that, like very cheap travel, staying on people's couches and taking these portraits and growing it into a thing. Even though it wasn't necessarily planned like that, it was really cool how it happened like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you know what? Like, I feel like that's how most people's creative journeys go. Like, not specifically like that, but there's no like blueprint, right? Like, so much of it is just like taking action, trying stuff, doing stuff. And even if that's not like, you know, going and traveling to these other states and these other cities and stuff, like even just like getting out of like your norm mm-hmm. of like what you shoot or how mm-hmm. you know, the places you visit, even if it's local, I think can be so huge, because you just never know what you're gonna find there and what that's gonna do. Which it's kind of what sounds like what happened with your book we're going to talk about as right. well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I just roll from one thing into the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe that's a good kind of bridge to that, though, because like, so your work that you've done ever since you've kind of like been into photography often has people in the frame. Mm-hmm. Like, you're focusing on people for most of it. And then you go and you put together this body of work over the last year that is, it doesn't have any people in it, does it? Like, obviously, I haven't seen the book, but I don't think it has there, any.
In the whole book, there's like one distant, out-of-focus person in one photo, yeah. and then there's one kind of like in-the-shadows boy in one other photo, but they're not really like the... It's nothing like my, like you said, my other work, because all that work started from the environmental portraiture angle, and it stayed that way, like descriptively, not necessarily stylistically, but yeah, this whole body of work that I just completed and made a book out of had, due to circumstance, no people in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah, I mean, quite a different time when you made it. But yeah. So I would love to hear, if we rewind then, obviously you started this right when the pandemic happened, but you were in Van. So what's the, I know you're traveling around, you're living in New York, you're in Amsterdam now, but this was made in Vancouver. So like, how did that all come together?
Yeah, for about 2 years leading up to the pandemic, it was like a nomadic period. So a different mm-hmm. city every 3 months. So Tokyo, Buenos Aires, Barcelona, Berlin, etc. And early to 2020, it was Vancouver was the next one. You know, it was supposed to be 3 months. And then after 1 month, the pandemic happened. Borders closed. Everything went on lockdown and wasn't really the plan, obviously. But also, like anyone else, I had no idea how long this was going to take, right?
Sure.
I remember in the beginning, people were still thinking, well, in about 6 weeks, we should be in a better space.
It's easy to forget how much uncertainty there was during those times.
We had no idea.
Yeah, so I was in England. I flew home to Toronto, and then I got on a plane the next day and flew back because I was like, I feel like I'm going to get stuck there, right?
Yeah. Well, that probably ended up being smart. Yeah, but yeah. Vancouver, 1 month in, borders locked down, and New York, as you might remember, was the worst place at that point in the world of everything. And so it's like, well, I'm not going back to New York right now. That's not a good idea. Let's just keep extending it. So, well, let's another month at this Airbnb, another month at this Airbnb. And in the meantime, when it all started, you know, that means like my whole normal, my whole photography practice was not possible anymore, because my photography practice is running around in busy city centers, spotting people that I find interesting, stopping them, asking them questions, doing a little chat with them, asking them if I can take their portrait, and like kind of move from there, which is also how I end up casting much of my commercial work. And so, first of all my jobs got canceled, obviously. Then I couldn't really leave. Then there weren't people on the street. And on top of that, I wasn't even in Vancouver, like proper, like busy part of Vancouver. I was in like a suburb area, which was super beautiful, but it wouldn't have been in, you know, if I would have picked a place to be, it wouldn't have been a quiet suburb. That's not really jam. But it was
nice to like kick back and eat dinner and have a drink or something.
not generally speaking, but maybe post pandemic, I'm more down for that now. But I couldn't do my normal. I couldn't run around in busy places because it wasn't busy where I was. I couldn't go anywhere because I didn't have a car, and you weren't taking any Ubers or buses at the time, obviously, during that time. And I couldn't take pictures of people on the street because there were no people on the street. So. Because I am a person who's very kind of routine based and like ritual based, I had to come up with something. And so in this little neighborhood, which wasn't particularly big, I just started walking every day, and I just decided I'm going to take a photo walk every day. I know there's not going to be people on the street. I know I can't do my regular thing, but I'm just going to slow down instead of run around and take pictures of like small things that I notice. And we'll see how that goes. And I knew that that was going to be at least something for me to hold on to, because I would make the decision up front, and then I wouldn't have to ever think about it again. Like, I wouldn't have to see every day, do I feel like going out for a walk? The weather's not great, or I'm not feeling inspired or whatever. I just made that call. However long this is going to take, which again, we had no idea how long this was going to take, I'm going to go for a walk every day, 2-3 hours around the same time. So I did. And my whole kind of way of seeing kind of changed, and I started training myself to just slow down and notice the things that I usually would run right past, whether it's like the shadow of a basketball rim on a garage at midday, or a crow on a roof, or just little things, little moments of wonder or beauty. And after a few weeks, I was like, oh, I'm digging this feeling. It's very meditative. It was kind of keeping me grounded in this kind of very uncertain world, right? Like, where I didn't really know what was going on, but I knew every day I'm going to go on my walk. It's something to anchor myself with. And so that's what I did every day.
Yeah. And it's really cool that this project and this book came out of that, because, you know, I mean, a lot of us were obviously in very similar situations, in a sense of just having all of this time and being in lockdown. I remember being here in England and basically, just going for wandering these neighborhoods, which were new to me. And it was like a point in time where, like, just having like this freedom almost, you know, freedom is a weird word, I guess, freedom in a sense that like, there were no expectations, because it was like
freedom from whatever your obligations would have previously been.
Totally. Exactly. But there's still like, you know, so I created some work. I was still able to do some YouTube stuff, but still, I think like there needs to be a point with the work you're creating where something clicks that gets you excited enough to obviously then go and pursue it in something like a book, which is obviously a huge undertaking. So like, for you with this work, like, was there one image, was there like a point where you were like, okay, this is like, cause the work to me, like, I look at obviously as a, you know, as like an audience and you know, I'm not connected to the process or anything. The work just looks incredible to me. It all flows, it all works. But for you, obviously, like, you're creating it every day, you're forcing yourself to go out. But like, was there like a sequence of images or a specific image, or like, what was the point where you were like, okay, this is something that's bigger than what I thought?
Well, what's actually kind of funny is that I didn't get to see most of the work until it was all over, because most of it was shot on film and I didn't like any of the labs in Vancouver. So I saved up like, and at the end of it, it was about 7 pounds of film that I had to FedEx to my lab in New York City. So it was a little bit different. I did also shoot some digital as well. And so I obviously got to see those images, and I was shooting the analog exactly the same way as the digital. So I knew the vibe, at least, of how it was going to come out. Mm-hmm. And I think the process was more that after maybe, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks, or maybe 5 or 6 weeks, so something like a couple of weeks in, I was like, I'm liking the way I'm seeing things. I'm liking how that's developing, and I'm very interested in this work. And since my jobs are canceled, I was also just purely thinking about, like, well, how am I going to pay my rent? You know, I was thinking,
sure.
Okay, well, I think this might have some good stuff in it. Maybe I can have a little print series. That could be like, you know, 3 or 5 prints come out of this. That'd be cool. And again, I didn't know it was going to go on for that much longer, because by the end of it, I had taken this daily photo walk 123 days in a row.
Wow.
And so after about 6 weeks, I was like, maybe we'll have some prints. And then after 3 months, I was like, well, maybe I can make a zine out of this. This could be bigger than a couple of prints. And then by the end of it, after 5.5 months, I was like, I might have enough for a book. Let's see what happens when we get all these pictures back, all these scans back. So that's kind of like, it wasn't necessarily based on specific images as it was more on the feeling and just the accruing of the work.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the commitment to it as well, because I mean, you know, as well as I do that there's, you know, like, inspiration and energy levels never run at 100% when you're committed to a project. Like, there's ups and downs and there's low points and stuff. And I think there's a lot of value in doing the work, like, you know, committing to these 123 days of, I'm sure there were days where you went out and things weren't working. Maybe you didn't make many images. And there were probably days, I'm sure, where, you know, you were like seeing things everywhere you looked.
Mm-hmm. That was definitely true. And funny enough, a lot of the days, because I keep roll notes of everything, a lot of the days where I felt like, man, this was a wash, ended up being days that I pulled the best images out of, which is also kind of funny. But you speak of inspiration. And I think I have like 3 main lessons that I learned from doing this project. And one of them is specifically about inspiration, which is that action comes before inspiration.
Hmm.
Not the other way around. So the act of going out and walking, maybe the first 10, 15 minutes, I'm like, but then I start like getting into the flow a little bit. And even if not every day is great, I will at some point be inspired to take some sort of photo, right? So action comes before inspiration has been like a big takeaway for me, because that also is another thing to hold on to. And you don't have to, you know, the kind of cliche from the movies is like, the artiste who waits for his inspiration and then the muse comes and blah, blah, blah. But really that's kind of bullshit. And you just need to act and do and make. And then, you know, sometimes there will be inspiration that comes after that. And sometimes not really, it doesn't matter, but it's definitely not coming if you're not doing anything.
100%. I can agree more. And sometimes there's long periods, long stretches where even if you're taking action, it doesn't come.
Yeah.
But you got to just keep making. I know it's been super interesting for me transitioning over here, obviously the pandemic, and then just starting to explore to try and find what interests me here. But recently I've discovered some stuff close to home, and I've been living here for a year now, and it took basically, like, I hadn't discovered this for a year, but it was like a really kind of unassuming place that wasn't flashy to my eyes, but I went out and I shot some images and something clicked and it's turning into something. But it's just like, yeah, experimenting, going out, trying things, taking action. And I know, at least in my experience, there's often like a lot of times where I go out and things just don't work, don't turn out, or I'm just not into it.
And that's okay. Yeah. I mean, it's still, even if it's your hobby, I think it's healthy to approach it as a job, in the sense that you have to show up, you have to act and do. And then that's what you have control over. You don't have control over how inspired you might be that day, but you do have control over showing up and actually making something.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is this excitement just knowing that, like, that's how you discover, like, eventually if you keep going, that's how you discover these little like things that could inspire like the next, your favorite project or your favorite work you've ever done before.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really cool. So the book is called Notice, which is a very fitting title. I'm curious about the work in it. Again, obviously, the book's just shipping. I haven't seen the book, but I've seen what you've posted like on your Instagram. Obviously been following your work for a while now. And just looking at, like, I'm on the page here that's selling the book. I was going to say, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Shop?
Crowd, or, yeah. No, I'd be worried if I forgot that word. But I was going to say, you did crowdfund this, essentially, but you have, like, a private website.
Pre-order, yeah. It's like a pre-order. Yeah. It's a shop with a pre-order option, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that was a really long-winded way of me saying that I'm looking at the book here in front of me with a few spreads from the inside. But is it all portrait orientation?
It is, yeah.
The images, really?
Yes.
And was that something that... Explain that to me a little bit.
Well, so it's actually... So you mentioned the title is Notice, and there's actually two layers to that. The obvious one, which is I'm walking around... And I'm trying to see really well, and I'm trying to notice things in the landscape and in the environment. But then once I got all that film back, and I started being able to look at all of the work as a whole, which is about 34,000 images,
wow.
I whittled them down. And when I had about 500 left, I did test prints of them all and put them all on the floor, like in a giant room, like all on the floor so I could see them. And then I had like this really kind of cool, crazy realization, and I started noticing these patterns in the images. So I started noticing that images that might have been taken 3 months apart in a different part of the neighborhood echoed each other in maybe the shapes and how they were laid out, or maybe the subject that was in the shot and it was just later and a change because of the season or whatever it might be. Like, there were some obvious echoes and there were some less obvious echoes, more subtle ones, but I realized that that's how I wanted to present the work. I wanted to present it as pairings. So each image, it's basically a pairing with the next image to it, except for seven individual images that kind of open each little mini chapter, if you will.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I love the power of like a collection of work, like a body of work, and also of pairing and sequencing. Just like, you know, I think nowadays with, viewing photography online with social media, like we get into these habits where you're looking at things just like individually, right? Like mm-hmm. the new image that someone posted up. But like what I always love is how you can take like a body of work and you can start pairing and sequencing, and all of a sudden certain images that might not have been very powerful on their own mm-hmm. take on a complete different life when you pair them up, or when they're part of like a collection of work as well.
Absolutely. And the other way around too, that were some of your favorite images, you're gonna have to chuck them because they don't fit, you know, they don't pair with anything and they don't fit the narrative that of the full story. So that's also another thing to discover. But it's absolutely true. Like it was so fun. It was like like those scenes in the movie where the police person has like all the pictures of people with the red lines, and all of a sudden like it goes like, and they discover like who did it or whatever. That was kind of the feeling of the process of pairing these images, because once I noticed the first pairing, I was like, wait a minute, those two go together too, and those two go together too. And so all of a sudden it was like, and I had like this whole like kind of fake book put together with these pairings, and I started seeing like, oh, that's the story. That's how I'm gonna show them.
That's amazing, man. And that's like, I'm glad you said that, because I think for a lot of people, it's important to realize like the power of working in on a project or on pairs. Even like, I even find from like a production standpoint, like not even once you've made all the images and you're trying to put them together, but like I've noticed even for myself, like if I go out to an area and it's an area that I'm working in as part of a project, I'll see images or like I'll see like a subject that in my mind will link with something I've already done. Mm-hmm. And therefore the image becomes something attractive to me. Whereas if it was just me looking for like the next flashiest thing out there, I would have walked right by that thing.
But totally,
it has this importance now because it fits with something else in the portfolio.
Yep, absolutely true.
Yeah, that's really cool. 500. So you got it down to 500 images, which still hurts my head to think about. But
and the book only has 84. So
yeah, which is just crazy. I want to just ask you one more thing about the work itself, and then jump into the production, because the production side of things, not like physical production, but I guess more of like sequencing and selection. That stuff really interests me, and design. But so you have all the images that are portrait orientation, and but then you also mixed color and black and white, and it even looks like you paired some color and black and white together. Like the one pairing I'm looking at here is great. It's like these icicle Christmas lights paired with these interesting looking trees and like a fence. So like that's not something that you see too often, but I mean, it just, like looking at it here, looking at your work, it works so well. So like what led you to kind of break out of the like obvious, you know, pair black and white with one another and pair color with one another?
Because I have my music background, the way I like to tell stories also have a musicality to them. And so the way I look at the color images, and there's way more black and white in the book than there are color images. So it's I would say, I haven't counted this, but I would say probably 80-20 black and white versus color. And the role that the color images have in the overall arc and narrative is, it's almost like they're little percussive elements in the song of the book, if you will. So they don't happen all the time. It's just like here and there, there's like a cymbal hit or a drum hit. And That's kind of the role of the color, to kind of like, it's a little jarring, not in a like scary way, but it's a little bit like, oh, bam, some red in my face all of a sudden out of nowhere after a bunch of like deep blacks and stuff like that. So I think I just happened to shoot almost everything in portrait mode to begin with. That's already something that I have to be careful with to not do when I do client shoots, because obviously clients also want landscape photos. Sure. And so when I have a client shoot, I oftentimes like will be like, okay, remember to take landscapes, and I always do. But if I'm just kind of like doing something on my own, I often end up taking pretty much only landscape. Only portrait orientation shots anyway. But yeah, I couldn't have put any. I did have some nice photos in landscape for this project too. But like I said before, you have to chuck some good ones sometimes because they don't really fit the narrative, and it would have broken up the rhythm too much.
For sure, yeah, that's really cool though. Seeing these, like hearing your kind of thought process behind, you know, sprinkling in like a color image every now and then, just to kind of like shake things up, which I think is important. I think one of the things that I'm always trying to be conscious of, as I start to put some of my previous work together and get ready to do a book, is like repetitiveness. Mm. You know, like I worry about, because obviously we all have like our certain styles and ways that we do things. So it is like things can get repetitive if you're not too careful. And I think that's a really cool way to just kind of like switch things up a little bit.
And I should also mention that once I got to 500 images, I was kind of able to get it down to 300. But at that point, I couldn't see the forest for the trees anymore because I was so deep into the work. And so I did actually get a lot of help from friends, and I ended up, just to kind of segue into the process of it, the production process of it all, I ended up setting up a bunch of Zooms, which was not something I would have done pre-pandemic either, because I wouldn't have really known about it. But I set up a bunch of Zooms with about 20 friends that are, some of them are photographers, some of them work in the business but are not photographers, some of them are just appreciators of photography. And I would do a screen share with my Adobe Bridge, and I would run through like the 250 or 300 images that were left at that point. So, mm-hmm. And I could see their face, and I could see their response to it. And that was so much more useful and interesting than what I would have done previous to the pandemic, which it would have been like, hey, here's a folder of images. Can you let me know what you think or which ones you like? Which is a huge ask. That's like to ask someone to look at 300 images and give you comments.
Yeah,
that's a massive ask. But if you can do it in an hour and you just want to look at some images while I scroll through them, I get more information out of that, and it's more fun, and it's not that big of an ask. And so that was super helpful. And then also Dan Rubin, a fantastic photographer and also the designer of this book, he was a huge part of helping me like with the sequencing, because sometimes I had a sequence And I just, there was like, something about this doesn't feel right. And then he might suggest flip these two around or whatever it might be. And then, this works, you know?
Yeah.
So it was definitely a very collaborative process.
Yeah, I think that's important as well. It's so easy to get consumed in our own work and attached to it. I'm working right now with Noah Waldeck, who runs Subjectively Objective. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but
yeah,
that's so I'm working on my book with him, and it was the first time, and it's actually kind of what I wanted, was to hand my work to someone and have them kind of start to do a sequence and then, you know, collaborate after and go through and move things and ditch things. And it'd been a very long time since I detached from my work that much. But I do think it's important because we get consumed with it. We get our favorites. We get kind of like hard-headed at times about, you know, how certain things should be. But I think there's so much value in having other people look at the work and give suggestions. And I think a lot of times it can help us make decisions that we would have missed, for sure.
Absolutely, because it's also very difficult sometimes to distinguish between, you know, is this a good photo or is this a great memory of taking this photo? And that's different. And showing this photo to someone else means there's no chance of that memory getting in the way. They're just looking at the photo.
Yeah, absolutely. I know for me, there's been some images that have ended up like making the cut, that like the whole time I'm like, I don't like that image. Mm-hmm. I don't like that image. Like, I don't understand why you're picking it. And then it's like, now it's paired up with something. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
that works amazing.
Definitely had that happen too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. So, so once you got it down, you said 85 images was what you ended up with?
I think it's 84 total now in the book. Yeah.
So I'm very curious to hear your thoughts then on like, how did you get to that point where you were okay saying, this is what I want to go ahead with? Because obviously we're all different, but I know like it's easy to get stuck analyzing things over and over and over.
Yeah, it is. But it was really good to have like people in my corner like helping with that, because if you're just doing it on your own, it's so easy to get stuck in those loops. And if you're doing it with someone else, then gives you a little bit more perspective on like what's a reasonable amount of time to think about something.
Sure.
And so, I mean, I knew how we got to 84 is that we had some things that I already knew. I knew, you know, there's a reasonable amount of photos that you can put in a book, right? Like I knew I wanted there to be between 80 and 100 because I wanted the book to be about 120, between 120 and 130 pages. As I was going through the work, that's what the work was telling me, that it was that size book. Like I knew about the size that I wanted it to be. I knew basic layout, which then Dan, of course, as a designer, really came up with the layout. And I knew it had to be this many images. I knew I wanted to have an essay in the book by one of my favorite writers. I knew I wanted to put some information in the book. Like there's a beautiful hand-drawn map by one of my favorite illustrators of the little neighborhood where I did all the walking. And I got a page with some stats because, you know, it's 123 days, but it's also, for example, like 1.6 million steps, according to my phone, that I walked. And it was like 1,200 kilometers or 1,234, which is, I looked up, okay, what's 1,234 34 kilometers from Vancouver, and it's Saskatchewan. So if I would have not walked just in circles, basically in this neighborhood, I would have walked all the way to Saskatchewan, which is kind of a
crazy
fun fact. But yeah, I knew that there were certain things I wanted in the book. And so I knew those things. And then I also, as we started pairing things and as we started seeing that there were a few images that had to be there that needed to stand on their own, there started a certain grid and a certain math started to form. So we had 7 images that needed to stand on their own and everything else was pairs, which means if like I said, I was kind of composing it like a song, the number of images between the individual images had to be the same number of pairings. And so there's like 7, one solo image, and then there's 7 pairs. One solo image, 7 pairs. One solo image, 7, until it's at the end. And so gotcha. I knew the math of that too. And that also meant I had to kick out some pairs that I liked, but they weren't fitting in that grid, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd assume it's probably hard to detach from some of that work that you liked in there and know it's not going to be in there anymore.
Yeah, it was a little bit hard, but wasn't as hard as I thought it would be because I knew it was serving the project.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. So you get down to kind of the end of this like selection process. What was it like getting into, I want to talk about like the actual production side of things just briefly, but you know, we talked a little bit about this at the start about how it was like, there's a lot of things that are just unexpected and it's obviously, you know, it's going to be a big undertaking, but until you really get into it, all of these little things reveal themselves. So like what, I know this is kind of a big question, but like, what did you learn through that production process? And is there like a lot that you would do different next time?
I don't know if there would be a lot that I would do different there because I'm very happy with how everything's been going. You know, one thing that's been a challenge is and this is very late into the process that we're talking about right now, but is the fulfillment side of things, because I just kind of assumed that if you operate on a very well-known platform, like we built our shop on Shopify, I just kind of assumed that any reputable fulfillment center could just kind of plug in and print and be done with it. And it turns out that that's actually not really the case, that you really have, there's actually a lot of work that goes into integrating a fulfillment partner, or if you're sending the books yourself, even that, with the back end of an e-commerce platform, basically. And so that's something that I didn't really realize. And I don't know if I could have done it differently because it's just kind of like the lesson that you learn as you do it. But I know that next time it will go way faster because now we've done all this work already up front.
Sure. So it's not so much doing things different, it's just knowing what to expect and being kind of knowing where to turn.
Yeah,
time,
totally.
How to solve certain issues.
Yeah. And like you said, everything is a little bit more complicated or takes a little bit longer than you thought it would. And also, you know, we got 6 weeks delayed because there was a global paper shortage. Well, I didn't see that coming.
Sure. Yeah. There's just certain things that are bound to happen that you couldn't plan for.
Yeah. And that was obviously pandemic related because so many people moved their purchasing to online stuff that people just ran out of cardboard boxes. Like there were no cardboard boxes to buy.
Yeah.
And still that's actually kind of tough. Like it used to be 1 or 2 weeks max, like lead time to buy like a large amount of cardboard boxes. And now we're talking like 8 to 9 weeks.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you would never, that's just one of those things you would not enter your mind as you're
never,
as you're planning. It's too focused on design and, you know, getting the book up for sale. So as you finish the design and all this stuff, like when you've got a chance to see like the first physical copy of the book, what was that experience like, you know, going through this process of like having this major shakeup in your creative process, focusing on something completely different, committing to this crazy
123 days. Yeah.
Okay. 123 days shooting. And then now you're at this stage where you have this in your hands. Like, what was that like, especially with it being your first book as well?
Well, I'm not so great at stopping and smelling the roses. That's something I'm working on. So when I first saw the book and I was alone at the printers. Well, I was with my friend Luke who came to take some video footage of it. I wasn't like, wee, look at this, I made a book. I was more like, okay, let's look at every detail to make sure that everything was done well. And then once I went through the whole book and I checked all the details and how the binding was attached to the back and if they used the proper stitching that we designed for it and all that kind of stuff, I was like, okay, yes, this is acceptable. I will move on.
I feel like that's how I would be.
And then 3 days later, not even that, like a day later when I woke up, I went downstairs and I had one copy with me after that visit. I was like, holy shit, this is great. I made a book and it looks exactly the way we wanted it to look. Like everything about it is exactly all those hours and the pains taken, like noodling on like tiny ass details. It all like it did actually lead to a thing that I'm proud of and that I'm really excited about sharing with the world. And I didn't have to compromise on anything because Dan as my partner in this project is just as obsessive compulsive as I am with like details and getting things just right. And so, you know, as an example, we went through 37 or 36 different linens before we found the exact right yellow that I wanted, because it had to match with like the daisies that are in one of the photos. And we, you know, there were like decisions on like how, like part of the cover, there's an image inlay on the cover, and it's inlaid into a debossed section of the cover, which means that you have a hardcover book and then they stamp a shape into it, in this case a rectangle, so that when you look at the book, the image actually lays kind of in the book rather than sticking on top of the book. Well, you know, there's decisions to be made about how deep does that inlay need to be.
Sure.
And that's like those kind of details. We didn't skimp on any of that kind of stuff. And I'm really happy that we didn't, because while it could be frustrating and extremely labor intensive at times, now it came out exactly the way we wanted it to.
Yeah, and it's certainly better to figure that out beforehand instead of getting 700 copies made and sit there looking at them thinking you're not that happy with it.
Totally. And I mean, and even little mistakes still happen, but we had to have it redone. Like there was like a, so there's another part of the cover, the title notice, which is on the cover, is what's called a blind deboss, which means, like I said before, it's kind of rammed into the cardboard and then you put the linen over it. And so you see the word, but there's no ink in it, which obviously plays into the theme of noticing things. So you can see that it says notice, but you have to actually be looking at it. And and my name is also debossed, but it has black ink in it. And so there was actually a moment where like a number of covers had been printed, thankfully not yet bound into the book, where a mistake was made and they put the ink in the title as well. And I was like, oh no, that's not going to work. And
that's a big mistake.
You know, it does actually look pretty cool, but it ruins the concept, you know? And that gave us another 2-week delay because we had to reorder the linen and do that over. And that was that's one of those little mistakes that can slip in the process where you're working with like dozens of people that all need to understand every single instruction that you're giving.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, I'd imagine, and things can happen. Yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, I'm sure just looking at the pictures of the book, I'm sure like it looks incredible, and I'm sure all that hard work will be very apparent when it's in people's hands, which is pretty exciting.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope I'm excited to hear from people. They started shipping this week and I can't wait to see the first kind of reactions of people to what it feels like in their hand and what it smells like and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's really cool. What I would love to kind of touch on here, just because, you know, we're talking about taking action, pursuing this project, you know, the importance of putting work together and how important this has been to you. Obviously, it's a big undertaking and it's not something that, like, I think you need to be at the right point to do something like this, right? Like, it's a big investment of time, of money, and you got to make sure that it's something that's also going to make sense financially, right? Like, you don't want to just go and print 700 or 800 books and have nowhere to sell them. But with that being said, I still think print is more important than it's ever been. Getting your work out there, if that's just like a physical print or if that's a book or if that's a zine. I would love to just kind of hear your thoughts on that. Say if someone's listening to this who maybe isn't at the point where it makes sense to go and make a book like you have, you know, what are your thoughts on doing something on like a smaller scale?
I totally agree with you that print is very important, not only for getting your work out there, but also for really truly seeing your own work, because there's just different quality to a print of a photo than looking at that same photo on your small phone screen or even your large computer screen. It's a printed image is the way you're supposed to see it, right? That gives your eyes and your brain the calm of actually being able to see everything about that image. If you're looking at a glass thing that shines light right into your eyes, not saying that that can't look pretty too, but that's not really what our brains are built for. And so to really see your work printed is super cool and teaches you a lot about your composition and the way that you use light and your contrast and all that kind of stuff. And so even if you just make a project that you print out one copy of for yourself, that's already worth it. And if you want to share it with friends and family or people who like your work on online, zine is also a great thing to do. It doesn't have to be a fancy art book. It can be a zine too. It could be a small book. It could be something through one of these on-demand services. If you want to do a couple books and it doesn't really, you're not looking to make that much money from it, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's super valuable to do, and also just fun. You know, that's important too. Like that, we remember we started doing this stuff because it was fun for us. It was fulfilling on a creative level. It was something that was inspiring, and it gave us that little kick of like, "Ooh, I look at this picture I took. This is awesome." And then a year later, take another picture, and then you look at the old picture, and you'll be like, "Wow, that wasn't that great, but I thought it was pretty great then. And look at this picture now that I took. It's way better." You know, that's a really great feeling to grow and learn things.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there's so much value in it for anyone to do. And like you said, even if it's just, you know, putting something together and printing out one copy, I think also just what you would learn from that process, mm-hmm. like we said, you know, getting into the mindset of like working on a project and building up a collection and ditching images and sequencing it and then seeing it in your hands at the end. I think there's so much value in that. And it can just be something, it can be something as big as you want if it makes sense and you're at the right point. Or I think it can also, like you said, just be something that maybe is for one or two or 10 people or whatever it is.
Totally. For your friends at school or whatever, you know, it's just fun.
So what, like, how has this impacted your photography career, not even from a business standpoint, but from like a creative standpoint, because you obviously switched it up in terms of focus and then this being your first book, like what do you kind of take away from this entire experience and process?
Well, I also felt I was at a point in my career where I wanted to have a book. So I didn't start this project, this Notice project, with the thought of this will be a book, because like I said, I didn't even know, is this going to take 4 weeks? Am I going to be here for 4 weeks? Or, you know, we didn't even know that. So I wanted the book because I got to a place where I felt I wanted to have something tangible to leave behind when I have a meeting with someone, or to be able to use as a stepping stone to growth, both creatively, because working on a project with such focus and learning all the steps of the bookmaking along with it means that I'm becoming a better photographer through that as well, right? So creatively, I wanted to do this experience as a big learning moment in various creative ways, but then also on a business level and on a entrepreneurship level, really. I think it was the right point for me to do this because I wanted to add a way of making money that I was super, super proud of, and that was all me. And obviously, mm-hmm. It's not all me. It's all these other people who helped me and I could have never done this on my own. But in terms of the images itself being all
sure.
mine. And
sure.
the vision of it being all mine and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted that to be part of my portfolio of what I do as a photographer. You know, I do commercial work, which is largely portrait oriented. Also, I do editorial work. And then I really wanted to do a major project of my own personal work and have that be a thing that also allowed me to not only learn myself, but also teach other people, because I have a newsletter that I send out weekly called Process. And I love sharing everything around what I'm learning every day, or something that I've learned in the past that has helped me a lot. And making a book is also kind of a platform of teaching, because I was able to, throughout the whole process, show off every step in my newsletter for all these other photographers who would like to, or maybe didn't think they would, but now maybe want to make a book too. And so part of doing this book is also to stimulate other people to think of making a project, which doesn't have to be a book. Like we said, it could be a print series, it could be a zine, it could be an online project. It doesn't really matter. But I wanted to show, I mentioned one of the three lessons earlier, which was not about this, but the other two lessons speak kind of to this point. And number one is, the action, well, I guess all three of them. So the one that we already talked about is action comes before inspiration, But the other two lessons, the first one is, if you do something every day, even if it's little, it adds up to a big thing, right? And so it can be very overwhelming to us creative folks to think of a big project and where do I even start? Let's not even start, right? Like if you would have told me beforehand, hey, for this upcoming project, you're going to walk 1,200 kilometers in a neighborhood with no people, and you're going to do that for 123 days in a row, and then you're going to have to go through 34,000 images, I would have been like, I don't think so. That's not,
yeah.
I don't think that's possible. But if you do, you know, if you show up every day and you take step, put your feet, you know, after each other, take a step every day, then it really does add up. And so that's like a big lesson for me that I'm hoping that this book also carries out to others. So that they are then inspired to do whatever the project is that they'd like to do, but to show that that's, you know, even not everybody has time to go walk for 3 hours a day, but maybe you have 30 minutes in your lunch break and you can make that into a thing, or maybe it's just the weekends. It doesn't really matter. You know, it's just about like showing, hey, you can do this. That's kind of like the main thing that I want to say to everybody all the time with my newsletter too. Like, hey, you can do this. And I'm showing you how. You just have to go do it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that, man. And it's funny you mentioning about like the, when you look at something as a whole and how big and daunting it can be. I know for me, I always say like, sometimes I try to do so much in a day that I end up doing nothing. Like, you know, those days where you're like, should I do this or this or this or this? And you dabble a little bit. And I find that is like, it goes hand in hand with any creative project, anything I'm doing. Often when I make the most progress is when I just sit down and I'm like, what's the next thing? Just the one thing that I have to do. If that's like editing a section of this or going and making images for an hour or, you know, writing something. Yeah. So I love that. I think it's so important to like, you know, think about where you want to go and think about things on a grander scale, but then kind of narrow your focus on and figure out what needs to be done next. What's
That's
most important.
Definitely my experience as well. The fact that it can be, it's, you know, I have my days where I feel totally overwhelmed and I don't get anything done, but I did sit behind my computer for 8 hours somehow, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there many times.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing, man. I love your willingness to just be like a really helpful part of the community and share and want to like help others and want to, you know, other people to just like be fulfilled creatively and learn as much as they can. I think that kind of stuff's so important, just being able to help other artists. So I would love to ask you, just as we kind of get to the end here, you know, you're someone just like reading about your background, talking to you a little bit now. It seems like you've done a lot of different things, a wide scope of things. You certainly have no problem taking action. So for like other creatives out there who are maybe like, let's say photographers for the sake of this interview and this podcast, but like someone who's maybe wants to like pursue their creative or their craft as like a career or maybe like a little more serious, what do you think is like the most, what's like the, I won't say the most important advice, but what's some important advice you think for anyone who wants to maybe like start growing from like a, both like an artistic and a business standpoint to start achieving some things and push themselves a little bit?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to how my situation got started with that project, one of many. This was not something I did on purpose, but in hindsight, the lesson is pretty clear, which is you gotta self-assign work that you want to be getting paid for, right? So again, this wasn't as thought out for me in the moment, but this is how it works. Like if I would have thought about it, I would have wanted to, that would have been my pick, right? Environmental portraits, because I'm very interested in people and their, what they do and their creativity. And those are the moments where I feel like most alive when I'm taking photos. And so if you want to get hired for a certain kind of photography, let's say for the context of what we're talking about, then you have to make that kind of photography and not wait to be hired to make that kind of photography. So let's say that you are super interested in doing a story in the New York Times about some interesting people, right? Like in, or about a news event or a political speech or whatever it might be. Well, they probably don't know you yet because you're still early on and you haven't put out work yet, but you can go to that political event and take photos. You can go to some interesting person in your neighborhood and be like, "Hey, sir, I live down the street and I love that you're always working on your amazing classic car. And I'd love, would it be all right if I could take some photos of you? It's something I'm practicing. It's like, I'm very passionate about photography and I'm interested in what you're doing here." And 9 out of 10 times people will be happy for that, you know? And if you then make that work and then put it out there on online, on your Instagram account, or you make a little zine and bring it around the neighborhood, whatever it might be, then doing that over and over again, rinse and repeat, that work will get better and it'll be the kind of work that you want to get hired for. So once it hits a certain place, whether that's quality wise or quality plus connection wise, then you will be getting asked for that. You know, you will be able to pitch, if you're not being asked for that, you can pitch that work to someone because you've been making that work. So that's like a big thing, self-assigning work that you want to be paid for.
Yeah, I love it. And I think you nailed it. I've seen a lot of times where it could be easy for people to like limit themselves. It'd just be like, well, I would love to do that, but you know, this isn't right or that isn't right, or right, I don't have the opportunity. And I think the coolest thing for me, or one of the things I enjoy the most, is like seeing other photographers who I get connected with, especially ones who are like maybe earlier in their careers, especially ones who take action, seeing them like start something, dabble a little bit, stick with it. And then, you know, all of a sudden a year and a half passes and they've grown so much and they've found all these opportunities just from going and doing the work. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's also so easy, especially if, you know, and we also have to consider like what your financial opportunities are. If you're struggling to make rent with your day job, right? That's makes it harder, of course.
For sure.
And that's part of it too. But I think that also then makes it harder to say no to certain types of photography, because let's say that you're paying your rent with wedding photography or event photography or a kind of photography that's really difficult, but isn't maybe speaking to your heart and soul. And for many people, of course, it is. I'm not dissing wedding photography in any kind of way. But let's say that I know a lot of people who do wedding photography because it pays really well and it does have some fulfillment to it, but it's not really what they would choose if they were wealthy, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And that's totally real and that's totally understandable. But that would still then say that doesn't give you the excuse to not make that other work for the most part, right? So if you're really passionate about car photography or portrait photography, whatever it might be, there's always time to do a little bit of it. And then it just takes a little bit longer if you don't have as much time. That's okay too. That's just the reality of it. But it's so, if you're a young photographer, it can be so easy to say yes to everything. Oh, you want me to take pictures of these products for your website? Sure. Oh, you want me to come to your wedding? Sure. All these other things, and it might not be exactly what you want. And sometimes you have to do them a few times before you actually even know that. But if you do know what you want, make that work and put it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, man. I think it's so important. So notice shipping now.
Yes. Finally.
But it's still but still available for purchase. Correct?
Yes. There's still a couple copies left of the first print, and we already went into our second print. So.
Oh, amazing. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
I know wrapping things up here, but I am just curious, what was that like going into like printing a certain amount? Obviously there's an uncertainty of like, I'm sure you were fairly confident that you have a pretty big audience and people like your work, but what was it like, you know, committing to a certain amount and waiting to see what happened?
Well, the choice was sort of made for us, because if you make a book that has this standard of quality in terms of, and I'm not even talking about the photography, I'm talking about the materials that we use and the kind of printer that you have to work with to be able to make work a book that is this high end, you basically can't go below 750. And so it's like, if you can either choose to make 750 of your print, or it actually gets cheaper if you make 1,000 per book. So it makes it a little easier to sell. And so we just were like, well, we're making 1,000 because that that's just, we can't make any fewer of them, really. So
you just had to commit, basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you're on to the second print already. You did a limited, was it 50? You did 50 limited
Somewhere between 50 and 60. I'm not sure where it evened out exactly, but there's also a limited edition version of the book. I mean, the first print is limited edition to begin with because there's 1,000 of them. There's sure. actually fewer yep. than 1,000 of them because there's other version. There's probably like 930 of them or whatever. And that has a linen cover that's yellow. And then we did a very special limited edition that's a red. And where the yellow comes from, the daisies in the photos, the red comes from the poppies in the photos. So that book is exactly the same on the inside. But the cover is different and there's only, you know, 50 or 55 of them in total. Yeah. And I think of those, there's maybe like 10 left or so.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that idea to switch it up and do like a second kind of limited edition with the red cover actually looks very nice. I like the yellow, but it's a cool contrast.
Yeah. It's hard for me to pick between the two, but what also is funny is I didn't realize this until afterwards, but as we laid the finished versions next to them, I also had a roll or a pack of Kodak Color Plus 200 laying on a table. And I was like, oh, this is the exact same colors. it's not exactly the same, but they have like a similar enough difference between the yellow and the red that it was like, oh, that's kind of a funny subconscious possibly thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So what's next after this? Book number two, you work, or like where does this send you from here?
Well, I mean, honestly, this reminds me of my days in the music business. Like a lot of musicians think like, all right, we made the album, now we're done. But that's not how it works. Like this is when it starts, right? So we did the pre-order and we sold our pre-order copies and we're shipping those this week. But now, you know, our ambition is for this book to be impactful and like have that inspiring confidence building, empowering effect on other creatives. So we want to sell as many of them as possible so we can reach more and more people. So right now is when the real work starts, really. Like this is when I'm starting to figure out, okay, are there interesting press outlets that could write about this, or which store should this book go to, all that kind of stuff, working with the distribution, getting the word out in general, like, and also you know, picking the right, we had a whole process of picking the right packaging so that this book arrives like in perfect shape. And we made, for the people who pre-ordered the book, they get like a bunch of special little bonuses, like a zine about the making of the book and really beautiful postcards from some of the images in the book. And that had to be also all done. And they all just arrived last week and had to fit in the package and all that kind of stuff. So right now we're in kind of, previously we were in book making mode and now we're in book selling mode, basically.
It's just another layer after layer.
Layer, it never stops. I was making the joke the other day that, you know, like the cliche of the disgruntled postman, like where like sometimes in the past postal delivery people have snapped in real life. I'm talking because it's just so overwhelming because every day they show up and there's like more and more mail and it never stops. There's definitely days like that in bookmaking world as well.
Dude, I can only imagine. When you say we, you keep saying
Dan.
We. So you and Dan, like, is this, you self-publish this, but maybe just touch on that quickly.
Well, so what happened was as we got further and further into this process, and, you know, Dan was like a huge partner on this for me, also as a sounding board for a lot of the decisions, because he actually has experience making books in the past as well. And so we worked together so well and we were so enjoying the process that we were, And we saw so many things being done in what we consider to be a not optimal way in the book publishing business that we decided to start our own publishing company, which is called New Style. It's called New Style because we're doing this in a new style. We're not following the old molds of how books are supposed to be sold and how the business deals are structured with the photographers and all that kind of stuff. We want to cause a revolution, well, an evolution, let's say, in that world. And so this book, one of the reasons that we went all out on getting like the best paper, the best linen, all that kind of stuff is because it's also a showcase of the work that we do as bookmakers. And it's our ambition to also publish books by other people.
Nice. Yeah, I was actually going to just ask you that, what the future looks like for the publishing company, doing some work with other artists, I'd imagine.
Yeah, that's definitely our ambition. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The first one out there is kind of like the ultimate test to kind of put all your ideas and basically show people what they can expect in the future.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No pressure. Well, that's awesome, Wesley. So if people want to grab a copy of the book, where can they do that?
They can go to newstyle.co, which is our shop. And there's only one book available because that's the only book we have. So it won't be too hard to find. Nice. And there's still a couple copies left of this special edition. And then there's still a couple of copies left of the first print. And once those are sold, it goes right into the second print. So nice. If you want the first print, which is cooler in a way, go get it now.
Nice. Awesome. I'll post links on the website in the description and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, amazing to hear about this journey. And I love stories like this where, you know, you basically you were in this position that a lot of us were in, and you just went and you committed in a very like normal place, a subdivision in Vancouver, and you got out of your norm and you committed to this work. And now you're sitting here after this enormous process with something that it sounds like you're pretty excited about. And that looks pretty incredible. So I think it's an amazing example of just how, you know, there's the cliche of like there's images everywhere, right? Like people totally. Always say that. And like, I think it's very true, you know, not to say that everyone's going to connect with the places that are directly around them. But I think that if you step out of what you're used to and you take the time and you kind of focus on maybe familiar surroundings, you might find some stuff that surprises you.
Yeah, I mean, my little tagline for this topic is the fact that you know, in what I thought was a super boring area, and I'm not dissing that part of Vancouver, it's gorgeous, but it's not, let's say, exciting. But in what I thought was a boring area, once I started really looking and really paying attention, it turned out to be a universe full of tiny little bits of wonder and beauty that I would have previously just rushed right past.
Yeah, that's so cool, man. I think it's a great example. And yeah, I'm excited for you. Excited with how it's gone so far and to see where you guys take things next with New Style.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing this and great to talk and yeah, keep in touch.
Will do.
Okay, so hope you all enjoyed that conversation. It was really cool for me. Like I said at the start, I recorded this months ago, so it was neat to sit back down and just go through this. And I know that there was kind of like a lot of lessons that I took away from it and things that I was reminded of. One of the big ones is just like the importance of the small steps of taking action. And I know so many times in the past I have let like the weight of a project or some certain endeavor bog me down, when in reality, you know, how these all work and how they all unfold is by just starting and picking away at things, and then you eventually get into a rhythm. So great reminder, also very timely for me because I have some things that, being honest, I've been procrastinating on. So yeah, hope this one inspired you. Hope you took some things away. And like I said at the start, definitely check out Wesley's work. Give him a follow on Instagram. Check out Notice, still available for order. And I'll put links below to all this kind of stuff. Other than that, it's good to be back. Hope you enjoyed this one. Looking forward to seeing where this goes in the future, but most importantly, just bringing back consistent content. Doing my best to keep this rolling for all of you, because I definitely appreciate the support and everyone who's sent just like questions and been curious about where it's been at. So thank you for sticking with me, and I'll talk to you soon.